Hi, my name is Max.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Well,
That's great.
I'm 13 years old and I'm an eighth grader at Cobb Middle School in Tallahassee.
Okay.
I think he knows that.
And also Scotty is my trumpet teacher, and
Okay.
I gave him some I some I gave him some I shared with him about my history project, and he mentioned your name. Congressman Lewis, because Dr. King Sr. was a major influence on Dr. King Jr., can you share any memories or recount any interactions between the two that impacted Dr. King Jr. and you?
Let me hear your question again, huh?
Oh, sorry. Because Dr. King Sr. was a major influence on Dr. King Jr., can you share any memories or recount any interaction between the two that impacted Dr. King Jr. and also you?
Martin Luther King Sr., Daddy King, had a tremendous impact on not only on his son, but also on many other people. And I think Dr. Benjamin Mays, who was the late president of Morehouse College during the time that Dr. King was a student and was a good friend of Daddy King, Martin Luther King Sr., Dr. Mays played a major role in influencing Martin Luther King Jr. and influencing so many of us that got involved in the Civil Rights Movement. Martin Luther King came under the influence of so many people, but I don't think anyone had as much influence on him as Benjamin Mays and his father. Martin Luther King, reading, studying, and learning about Gandhi helped to make him the man, the person, the leader that he became. And Gandhi influenced his teaching, his words influenced many of us. I heard of Dr. King when I was 15 years old in the 10th grade, and I met him in 1958 when I was 18. He influenced me and helped to make me the person that I am today. Without individuals like Martin Luther King Sr., Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, and others, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. These three men, in some way, were all consistent and persistent. They never gave up, they never gave in, they never became bitter or hostile. They saw the society and they didn't like what they saw. They wanted to make things better. To be in a meeting, to be in Martin Luther King Jr. present, made you, drove you to be better, to be a better human being, to be a better neighbor, to be a better friend. And when you saw something that was not right, not fair, or not just, you were inspired to do something about it.
Max is going to ask you the next question regarding Dr. King Sr., if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Sir, what do you think Dr. King Sr.'s courage came from to stand up against racial inequality?
You know, they both had studied religion, and the father and son both became strong ministers, and they believe in the teaching of the great teacher. And I think, I truly believe they were inspired by God Almighty, but by the teaching of Jesus. It's like when I was growing up as a young child in rural Alabama, and we see those signs that said white waiting, colored men, white women, colored women. I didn't like it, and I wanted to do something about it because I had heard of Rosa Parks, I heard of Dr. King. And my mother and father and grandparents would tell me, don't get in trouble, don't get in the way. But Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King Jr., and Gandhi inspired me to get in trouble, what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. So I got in the way to try to do something about it. Or if you were in a meeting with Martin Luther King Jr., or you heard him speak at a rally or in church, you were so moved, you were so inspired, you were ready to go and do something and say something.
Wow.
We have made a lot of progress. And the signs that I saw when I was growing up as a young child, going to the movie, all of us were black children, had to go upstairs to the balcony. And the little white children went downstairs to the first floor. And those signs are gone. They are gone. And the only places you can see those signs today in America will be in a book, in a museum, or on a video. But even today, in spite of all of the progress and all of the changes that we have made, there's still those invisible signs that put people down because of the color of their skin or because of their race. And that's what we must still fight against. In my native state of Alabama, parts of Georgia, Mississippi, and other parts of the 11 states, the old Confederacy, from Virginia to Texas, people couldn't register to vote. Simply because of the color of their skin. Every African-American teachers and lawyers and doctors told they could not read well enough. They could not pass the so-called literacy test. And at that time, people were asked to count the number of bubbles in a bar of soap, the number of jelly beans in a jar. But we got the Voting Rights Act passed and changed that. But there's still stumbling blocks to try to make it harder and more difficult for people to register and vote.
Yes,
and even after President Obama got elected, there were people didn't like the fact that this man of color had been elected president. And they gave him a very hard and difficult time from time to time. But he showed that he could be above all of that. And he had been able to teach a lesson, a great lesson, not just to Americans, but to people around the world.
Sir, in these crazy times, what can kids like me that can't really vote yet do to continue the courageous example that you and Dr. King Sr. and Dr. King Jr. and so many other heroes of your time to make things better for others today?
Well, I say young people like yourself, students, you can be a strong and mighty voice to help bring about change. Another generation of young people got out there and they push and they pull. They wrote letters. They carried signs. Simple things like saying, let my mother and father register to vote. Let my teachers register to vote. And some of the young people had signs saying, I'm not old enough to vote. My teacher is old enough. My mother, my father, my grandparents, my grandfather, my grandmother. But you can write letters to the editors. You could use social media to speak up and speak out and say, we are one people. And it doesn't matter whether we're black or white, Latino, Asian American, a Native American. We're one people. There was a man by the name of A. Philip Randolph, who was one of the leaders of the 60s. He was born in Jacksonville, Florida, moved to New York, and became a champion of civil rights and human rights and labor rights. He was there from time to time, maybe our forefathers and our foremothers all came to this great land in different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. That is true today more than ever before. And we got to, you got to speak and write about the oneness of all humankind. It's not only young people, it's not only good for young people, but it's good for high school and middle school students, college students, and even adults, even members of Congress. But we had to sit in on the floor of the House around gun violence. We call that good trouble, to try to make it real, trying to dramatize the issue. There's so many ways that we all can organize in a nonviolent fashion. Peaceful protest, saying to the larger society that this is not the world that we want to live in. We want to make things better for everybody. But no one is left out or left behind because of their background, because of their race, their color, and nationality. We must learn to live together as brothers and sisters. If not, we'll perish as fools. And I said to young people, and people not so young, I said it in a commencement today in South Carolina, that we must look out for each other and care for each other. For we are one people. We all live in the same house, not just the American house, but the world house. And then I said also to this group today that if we get it right here in America, if we can get it right, maybe we can serve as a model for the rest of the world. I see members of Congress, and they're black, they're white, they're Latino, they're Asian American, and I see them on the floor, especially on the Democratic side, and I say, how you doing today, my sister? How you doing, brother? And sometimes some of them are sort of surprised, but I think they expect me to treat them in that vein. There's one member, his name Paul, first name is Paul. There's another member, first name is Louise. And I said to them sometimes, hello, Brother Paul, how you doing? Hello, Sister Louise. We must find ways to be a little more human.
Congressman, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
We've gotten so much from you this evening. I know Max wants to say goodbye and thank you.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you. Thank you. Well, are you all in D.C. anytime? Come by and see me.
Oh, we will. And we're coming up to Atlanta to also talk to Miss Christine Ferris King.
Good.
And in a couple of few weeks, just to talk to her to get some personal accounts.
Yeah, she's very, very good. I saw her on Saturday, and we... she's really, she's writing, and she's very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very fortunate for us, especially for, I think, another generation of young people to understand, you know, how far we've come and how much more we still have to work together.
Right.
And it's good to get a reminder of our history and our living history. And so...
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time.
Well, you're more than welcome.
Yes. And have a great evening and blessings to you, sir.
Well, you all have a good evening and blessings to you and all members of your family.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.